Hello and welcome to the weekly FGM TV News Review. I'm Susan Mitchell. Here at FGM TV, we focus on news and programs that illuminate the truth of Falun Gong, which is also known as Falun Dafa. Falun Dafa is a traditional Chinese spiritual discipline that includes exercise and meditation. Its principles are based on being true, good, and enduring, which is also translated as truth, compassion, and tolerance. The practice began in China in 1992 and quickly spread by word of mouth throughout the country. In 1998, a government survey concluded that the number of practitioners exceeded membership in the Communist Party. 1 year later, dictator Jiang Zemin began a brutal persecution that violates not only the Chinese constitution, but also international treaties signed by China. Our top story this week, the world's first feature-length movie about the persecution of Falun Gong in China will soon be available in 11 languages. NTD TV recently interviewed Canadian actor Michael Mahonin, who wrote, produced, and directed the first feature-length movie in the world that deals with the Falun Gong issue. Sandstorm tells the story of one policeman in China who is persuaded by his wife to follow the 610 office's orders to persecute a Falun Gong practitioner who is handing out flyers near his apartment. Michael has skillfully woven many elements together to give movie fans a glimpse into the personal lives of people who've been manipulated by propaganda, how they react when faced with the truth, and how what goes around comes around.
Well, the reason we made the movie was because there's a persecution of innocent people going on in China. That was the main inspiration. And, I mean, you know, people wonder, who are these people in China who are persecuted? I mean, you could say, you know, who's your neighbor? Your neighbor might be a doctor, your neighbor might be a lawyer, farmers, school teachers, little children, university students. People from all walks of life in China are being persecuted for practicing truthfulness, compassion, and forbearance. The inspiration for doing something like this is something that comes completely from the heart. It's not for fame, it's not for making money. It's to simply try to tell the people the truth about what's going on in China, because they don't get to know the truth. The truth is blocked out, and all of the information they get, all of it, comes straight from the government's mouth. And we know, as practitioners who study the teachings, we know what the teachings say, and we know the lies that are told. And it's just unbelievable just how completely opposite the information is that they were telling people about Falun Gong. So when we see something like that, we do things like maybe create dances to show the beauty of Falun Gong and then how it's inspired us to do nice things, or to do something like make a movie, like we've done in this situation. So this movie was made in order to let people know the truth about what's going on with the persecution. I would say one of the difficult parts about making the movie is that we don't have a lot of money. We don't get funding from anyone. Everything we do as practitioners, it comes from our donations, and we do that from our hearts. We see something very good in what we practice. We know people are being persecuted and harmed very badly, so we want to tell people the truth. That takes money if you want to make a movie. We made this movie for an extraordinarily small amount of money, but it actually ended up looking quite professional because we have some people who have experience in the movie business who practice and have just given their time voluntarily to do this. One of the things that really, really surprised me about making the movie is that I've been an actor for 14 years, and I've worked with Michael York, I've worked with Christopher Reeves rather. I've worked with like some really good world-class actors. And the actors in this movie, they're all Falun Gong practitioners. I was stunned every day at how amazing their performances are. I mean, they cry, it's amazing.
Thanks, Michael. Sandstorm is currently being translated into 11 different languages and will be screened in the not-too-distant future throughout North America, Europe, and Australia. We'll give you more specific details as soon as they're available. Chinese President Hu Jintao, who just returned to China from a recent visit to Australia, probably didn't expect to see Falun Gong practitioners when he took his morning walk recently in a park in Canberra. One of the practitioners there said, "It was around 8:30 in the morning. We were practicing the Falun Gong exercises by Lake Burley Griffin and were surprised to see Hu Jintao passing by. When we finished the first exercise, I heard footsteps. I felt a group of people had walked by, and there were people taking photos in the distance, so I opened my eyes and saw that 20 to 30 people had just passed by. They looked like Chinese officials. I was curious and wondered if Hu Jintao was among them. I moved closer, and there he was. He was walking at the end with only two bodyguards beside him. Just then, a photographer came up and told me he was from the Sydney Morning Herald. I was wearing a yellow jacket with Chinese and English words, Falun Dafa and Truthfulness, Benevolence, Forbearance. Two Chinese officials came to us and looked at us. I greeted them and said, 'You won't see Falun Gong practitioners practicing in parks in China now, right?' A Canberra policeman said to the reporter, 'The Falun Gong practitioners picked the best way to express their will to Hu Jintao.'" Chance meetings seem to have been the order of the day recently. At the end of October 2003, the Falun Dafa Information Center in New York advised that Mr. Guang Jianwu, a member of the Chinese Communist Party's inner circle, has been sued for genocide, torture, and crimes against humanity during his visit to Cyprus. Chinese officials do their best to avoid any contact with Falun Gong practitioners who position themselves in front of the buildings where their meetings are to take place. But Mr. Wu was out of luck. On arriving at the Cyprus House of Representatives, he seemingly mistook one practitioner in a business suit for one of the Cypriot government leaders, walked up to the practitioner and shook his hand. With a smile on his face, the practitioner said in Chinese, "Falun Dafa is good." Unfortunately, our camera was not close enough to record the look on Mr. Wu's face. Our special report this week: how do judges hand down sentences in China's courts? On March 19, 2002, the English edition of China's People's Daily Newspaper announced, "Judicial reform meets WTO rules." The article stated that the Supreme People's Court, the country's highest level court, assigned the right of handling commercial cases involving foreigners to some middle level courts, and that the new order is an example of judicial reforms that will help China conform to the World Trade Organization's principle of non-discrimination. At the end of October 2003, I spoke with Canadian lawyer Clive Ansley, who was attending a conference in Toronto. Mr. Ansley recently returned to Canada from China, where he litigated about 300 cases in Shanghai over the last 14 years. His experience in the courtrooms of China detail just how difficult it is for plaintiffs to be fairly judged. And this is especially so for innocent people like Falun Gong practitioners who have been targeted by the Communist Party leaders. I'm talking with Clive Ansley, who is a lawyer who recently spent 14 years in Shanghai. And he's here in Toronto attending a human rights seminar today. Thank you so much, Clive, for agreeing to speak with us for a second.
Not at all, thank you.
Would you like to just say why you've come here today?
Well, I've come because I just recently returned to Canada after 19 years on the other side, actually, 5 in Taiwan, but 14 in Shanghai. And I've joined a British Columbia law firm, which is very, very heavily interested in human rights and has won a good number of important human rights decisions in Canada. And I just belatedly saw the advertisement for this particular conference and was very, very hopeful that I would meet other people of like mind, and I have done that.
That's wonderful. It's I heard you speak of how difficult it is to win it, or the how it's almost impossible to win a case in China at the moment because of the structure. Of, could you just quickly say, you know, how what do judges in China have to contend with at the moment?
Well, the structurally, the biggest problem with the Chinese courts is the existence of a body called the Judicial Committee. And the court itself, and a trial in a Chinese court, is, in my view, I have to say, an exercise in fraud. Because if you walk in as an observer, you'll see what looks like a regular courtroom. You'll see three judges sitting up in front. Each party will have a lawyer. The lawyers will cross-examine witnesses for the other party. Both sides will pass up documentary evidence to the judges, and the judges will nod sagely and look duly impressed. And when the open trial is finished, that's the end of the job of the judges. They don't make the decision. We have a saying that those who hear the case don't make the judgment, and those who make the judgment haven't heard the case. It goes to a committee in the back room, comprised of 5, sometimes 7, sometimes 9 senior judges from that court, and they sit down usually once a week, might be a Wednesday afternoon, and they will make the judgments in maybe 25 cases that they've never heard. They've never heard the evidence. They don't, in most cases, even discuss principles of law or the evidence that was put forward in the case. They discuss such things, for example, if it's a claim by a Chinese party against a foreign party for a large sum of money, they discuss the financial situation of the Chinese party and how quickly they need the money. But very seldom, from what I'm told, and I do have sources inside these judicial committees, they very seldom discuss either law or the facts of the case. When they have made their decision, they then direct the judges who heard the case to write that decision and find a basis for it in the law, write a set of legal reasons, and the judgment will come out over the signatures of the three judges so that anybody outside the system is not aware of this committee in the back room. And the biggest influence within that committee is the representative of the Chinese Communist Party. And the Communist Party, both in law and in practice, both in theory and practice, exercises leadership over the Chinese courts. So you can't possibly have the rule of law.
So even though we're hearing of judicial reform, it's got tremendous hurdles to overcome before we're going to see real.
That fundamental one. You cannot possibly ever have the rule of law while you have enshrined the principle that one party exercises leadership over the courts. Moreover, the organic law of the People's Procuratorate specifies that courts and judges are under the supervision of the prosecution, the procuratorate.
Thank you very much for speaking with us today.
You're welcome.
Thanks. I was speaking with Canadian lawyer Clive Ansley, who recently returned from 14 years of litigating cases in Shanghai courts. In last week's program, we interviewed Li Shai Lemish in Los Angeles. He told us about the plight of a very brave Falun Gong practitioner who has been tortured to the brink of death in Jilin prison in China for exposing the Chinese government's propaganda to his fellow countrymen, and how more than 100 of his fellow practitioner prisoners are hunger-striking to protest. These candles in Toronto are candles of mourning and candles of hope for those in Jilin prison. Toronto was just one of many cities around the world where practitioners held vigils in front of Chinese embassies and consulates. People light candles for many different reasons. Falun Gong practitioners say they're looking forward to the day when they can light candles to celebrate the end of the persecution in China. Thanks for watching the FGM TV News Review. I'm Susan Mitchell. See you next week.